his roll taking him onto his back, crushing his arms beneath him.
Fire blast.
He rolled on, hit the huge near-side front wheel of the Warwag, and struggled to his feet. A round thudded into the ground next to him, and he dove around the side of the big MCP. The priority was getting into the Warwag, and that could only be achieved by canceling the booby traps. And that, in turn, could only be achieved by accomplishing a feat that was damned near impossible in his present state. But not entirely. He scrambled alongside the looming vehicle, now with mud splashing up into his face. The heavy dabs of rain had been transformed into a smashing downpour of water almost at the bat of an eye. Here at the rear were heavy caterpillar tracks. At the front of these, under the chassis, was a covered switch, the cutoff. Once thrown, the circuit that commanded the booby traps was dead, and he could climb aboard. But first he had to throw the blasted thing. He backed into the bulk of the Warwag and bent over, bowing his back. His arms rose behind him, and his fingers thrust through all the mud and muck and filth that had accumulated there on the vehicle's underside, and finally caught hold of the casing. Hearing as he did so, bursts of fire from Christy battling it out with the Sec-Man.
Keep it up, Christy.
His fingers tore at hard gobs of dried mud. He unlatched the casing, felt inside every nerve in him screaming, his head to the right, expecting any second to see some kill-crazy Sec-Man storming around from the Warwag's front, auto-rifle flaming. Instead, all he saw through the now bucketing rain was the sky still flaring up in bursts of shocking light, his ears taking in the almost continual rumble of distant detonations. He attempted to shove the switch, failing again and again as his hand slipped.
Ah, come on, you bastard. Turn off! Turn off! Turn... Yes!
It was a system that worked outside or inside. It didn't matter. That was the simple beauty of it. But there was still the problem of getting into the Warwag. Still one last switch to be thrown inside. Already he was staggering back the way he'd come, toward the front. Again he bent over, eyes still glued to his right, and again his fingers fell through the switch housing.
Budge, goddammit! Fall open!
He wrenched it, his heart pounding. He knew his fingers were by now slick with blood, though he could feel no pain. He could feel almost nothing in them at all. The casing suddenly flicked down, and he jabbed at the switch inside. Suddenly, Ryan was reeling sideways as something solid smashed into the side of his skull. His arms scraped along rough metal as he crashed to the ground.
Oh, shit. They came around the back.
He lay in the mud, breathing hoarsely, his body twisted, grimacing with the pain that was daggering through his head, slowly opening his one eye, and making out two figures looming over him in the downpour. Strasser, Kelber. Both had pieces, handguns jabbed down at him, at his face.
You think you're smart, Ryan, but you're shit, and you're gonna die like shit.
Ryan spat mud and water. He couldn't make out what Strasser was saying. He tried to get up, but couldn't. Then Kelber was dragging him to his feet, smashing a hand repeatedly across his face.
Smash him, Kelber! Break him! Rip the shit apart!
Kelber kicked his legs, and Ryan staggered, toppled, collapsed to the ground, spraying mud and slop into the air. Ryan lashed out then, savagely, but there was no target, and Strasser lunged at him, falling across one of his legs, jamming an outspread hand into his face.
Ah, fucker!
Ryan kept kicking, flailing around with his other foot, but it was difficult to do anything destructive with his hand still tied.
The box! The box! Get it, you cretin! Cram the beetle down his fucking throat!
Strasser glared down at Ryan, and to Ryan the scene took on a nightmarish quality as water sluiced across the gaunt man's skull-like, battered face, a bucketing deluge of hot rain hammering down on him with punishing force.
I got it! I got it!
Ryan saw Kelber with the box in his hands, his fat sausage fingers ripping at the lid and not getting it right, the box becoming a live thing in his hands so that he was suddenly juggling with it.
Grab it, you fool!
Kelber bobbled it left and right, then caught it and opened it.
Ah!
Strasser thrust a fist down into Ryan's mouth, uncaring whether Ryan bit him or not. Both hands now brought into play, fingers gripping his jaw, clenching his teeth, yanking Ryan's mouth open. Kelber leaned over, the box in his hands starting to tip up. Then, with an almost superhuman strength jolting through him like an electric charge, Ryan heaved himself from under Strasser's knees in a desperate, scrabbling roll, and as he did so, he felt the cords at his wrist tear and snap. He wrenched his arms around, pain blazing up from his wrists, and caught Strasser's open coat, clutched it, and heaved. The panic and terror that was flooding through his system at the thought of that insect, more than enough to send the gaunt man crashing into Kelber's legs. Kelber disappeared from view, and Ryan smashed a fist into Strasser's gut before pulling himself away and staggering to his feet. Only a grab away from him, a handgun lay in the mud. As he reached for it and held it, the thought flared through his brain that there was probably mud up the blasted barrel, but he was past caring. Ryan swiveled, firing at Strasser as he swung, and Strasser was flung back, winged, the bullet skinning one shoulder. Strasser hit the mud, slid, scrabbled sideways on his knees and one arm, like some ungainly spider that had lost some of its legs. He was soaked to the skin, filthy with mud. His teeth were bared, his eyes blazing with hate and fury at what he'd lost. Ryan advanced two steps, the automatic in his right hand, his body aching and his head throbbing. His teeth, too, were bared, but in a terrible grin of triumph.
Ah, bastard! All that hardware? You must be insane!
Yeah. Just wary of crazies like you, Strasser. There are self-destruct mechanisms throughout the fleet. In every truck and land wagon buggy. Automatically running if a switch is not thrown every hour, or as soon as a vehicle is safely locked from the inside on a 4-hour fuse. If there's no one there to throw that switch, or if there is, but they're all dead, bang.
Ryan was aware of Kilber close to him on his left. He seemed to be having difficulty getting up, or so it appeared. He was on his knees, both hands to his throat. One hand went out to Strasser. It looked as though Kilber was pleading, begging Strasser for mercy. His eyes were almost popping out of his head, and Ryan could see the whites of them clearly.
Your friend, Strasser. I think he swallowed the beetle.
Kilber, still on his knees, scrambled toward Strasser, pleading, imploring. Ryan couldn't imagine why. Kilber ought to know by now there was no help there, no pity in the gaunt man. But he could imagine those tusk-like mandibles sinking into gullet flesh so determinedly that no amount of hawking and gagging would clear the filthy little bastard out.
To hell with a pair of you.
Ryan pointed the gun at Strasser's head and pulled the trigger.
Son of a fucking bitch!
No round. Ryan realized it was Strasser's gun, and the 8-clip had been all used up. He hurled the weapon at Strasser, and the heavy automatic struck the gaunt man full in the mouth. Strasser fell back, spitting blood and bits of tooth. Ryan made to jump for him, but Strasser was back on his feet again, sprinting away, clutching his shoulder, his long legs stabbing at the ground, boots splashing into puddles. Suddenly, Kilber pitched sideways, and Ryan saw black blood welling up out of his mouth like dark chocolate. Kilber lay on his back, his body twisting and writhing, his legs kicking in the air. Kilber was drowning in his own blood. Ryan flung himself around and jumped for the short ladder to the door, knowing that the seconds were clicking away, nearer and nearer to a total wipeout. He wrenched open the door and fell inside. There was a faint and musty smell to the interior. He felt a prickling at the back of his throat, but nothing more. He yanked the door shut, on personal full auto now, sheer survival the only consideration. It was too late for the rest of the convoy. It would have been physically impossible to make safe the other vehicles. The explosions to the east had ceased. Only fire consuming what remained lit the sky now, an angry orange dancing against the deeper red of the night. He knew that the traitor would have automatically thrown the on switch as soon as he heard the train had been nerved out, and as soon as he realized he was surrounded. And the captains of the other vehicles would have done the same. It would have been a reflex action. Therefore, the convoy was set to blow only minutes after the landwag train. He shoved Cohn unceremoniously out of his radio chair, felt for the box under the table, snapped over the lever there. Then he dove for the ladder up to the machine gun blister in the roof. O'Mara was still in his seat, slumped forward, dead to the world. Ryan reached past him for the MG grips, canted the weapon, opened up, and proceeded to flay the truck parked beside the war wagon at almost point-blank range. Blazing tracers ripped into the back of the truck's cab, opening it up, chewing it apart, and Ryan could hear nothing but the terrible chatter of the gun, could see nothing but the devastation it created. He jumped back down to the main cabin and dove for the drive seat. Chess was lying on the floor beside it, and Ryan stepped over him and sat down. He began to play the console, feeling a stupendous relief flooding through him as the engine bellowed into life. He glanced to his right, saw flames in the cab of the parked truck, a SEC man silently screaming and haloed in fire as he struggled to claw himself out the open window. Then that scene was wiped as the huge MCP lurched forward, gathering speed. He flicked the spotlight on, and the gloom became bright day in an instant. He saw fireflies all around him, red muzzle flash winking in the dark beyond the spotlight's beam. They could still kill him. All it needed was Tracer at the front, and the temporary screen would blow apart and him with it. He jabbed one of the firing buttons on the console, and cannon fire hammered out its death zone from below, pounding a buggy in front that suddenly ripped apart in a gout of white fire as its gas tank erupted. Figures fled away from his spot beam. Any one of them could have been Strasser. To one side, another buggy lurched into life, and Ryan savagely swung the wheel to send the Warwag barreling into it. He swung the wheel again and felt the rear tracks ride over what was left.
Come on, Christy. Where the hell are you?
He saw her, a fleet figure sprinting into his beam along the road. He sent the Warwag crashing up and onto the blacktop, aimed it for Moxon, and geared it into full auto mode. Then he scrambled over Chess and moved fast across the cabin area to the door to unfasten it. The Warwag ground on along the road, medium fast, and the young woman appeared in the doorway, running alongside.
Ryan!
Christy! My hand!
She flung herself towards Ryan's outstretched hand and grabbed it. He hauled her in as more bright light tore the night apart and the Warwag shuddered. Ryan slammed the door shut, cutting off the worst of the thunderous explosions that were now ripping through the convoy.
Co-driver's seat!
Ryan hurtled the sprawled body and dove back into the chair, snapping the brute vehicle out of auto and wrenching the wheel as another shockwave from the self-destructing convoy hammered at them. Christy collapsed into the seat beside him, wiping an arm across her mud and sweat-stained face.
Is life with the traitor always like this?
The smoke from the fire coiled uneasily, circling upward among the branches of the surrounding trees. The lodgepole pine burned with a crackling intensity. Ryan lay back against the trunk of a fallen cottonwood, watching the gray pillar of smoke as it disappeared above him, vanishing long before it reached the top of the forest. The wind was rising, bringing the stinging taste of a cold blue norther. The patches of sky that he could see through the trees were raven black, torn across every few minutes by the jagged silver lace of lightning. Above the crackling of the pine logs, he could hear the far-off rumbling of thunder in the tall peaks of the Darks. In the clearing around him were all the survivors of the massacre at Moxon, sitting or lying sprawled. There had not been the time or the opportunity to save anyone outside of Warwag 1. Even as Ryan had driven away, heading north and west through the sleeting rain, the heavy vehicle had rocked and twisted against the explosions of the rest of the train. The time bombs had all done their work successfully, just as they'd been designed to. The big combat carrier now stood 50 paces away on the edge of the rutted track. There were four or five men still on board, carrying out essential maintenance checks. Laz was clearing up after the meal of heated stew and beans. Cone was running around the dials of his radio, trying to pick up news of pursuit. The rest of the survivors were all around Ryan, some already asleep. Something rustled out among the pines, and Ryan's hand dropped to his pistol. Abe grinned at him from the far side of the fire and shook his head. Abe had the best eyesight of anyone Ryan had ever met, except for Mutie's.
Only a marmot.
I need to relax. It's been a real bad couple of days.
Hovak, lying to Ryan's left, nodded her agreement.
Very true.
She had the strained look around the eyes that they all had from the effects of the gassing. Her speech was slurred, and the whites of her eyes were tinted pink. But she'd been luckier than some. When Ryan had finally stopped the Warwag 2 hours out of Moxon and helped Christy to collect everyone together, seven of the crew hadn't made it, their hearts and lungs stilled by the nerve gas. There was enough of a crew to operate the Warwag, but if they came into a heavy combat situation, they'd be short on firepower. Ryan ticked them off on his fingers. Apart from those in the vehicle, there were he and Christy. The fire glinted off her vermilion hair as it rolled about her neck and shoulders where she slept on the opposite side of the clearing. Chess, the driver, and O'Mara were next, heads together, talking quietly. Kathy lay, smoking a crudely rolled tobacco cigarette, next around the rough circle. Rintoul, Hooli, and Lint were all either sleeping or sitting up and looking vacantly into the darkness. In all, he made it 24. It wasn't a whole lot to tackle the Deathlands. The glitter of firelight off steel caught his eye, and he saw the chubby figure of Finnegan whittling away at a broken hunk of the dead cottonwood with his razored butcher's knife. The man saw Ryan watching him and held up the piece of wood for him to see.
Recognize the bitchin' bastard?
Even in the poor light, Ryan could make out in the rough planes of white wood The gaunt features of Court Strasser. That was a debt to lay on the table. A debt that would get settled one day, Ryan had no doubt. Though their situation was dismal, with so many friends and good comrades dead and stiff behind them, it was a damned long way from being desperate.
Ryan?
Yeah?
Here.
Ryan rose and stretched, feeling the tightness of his muscles, picking up the lappa and moving to squat down at the side of the trader. Over the years, Ryan had seen a lot of men, good and bad, by the farm. Some of them had been wiped away in the blinking of an eye, and others seemed to have death standing silently at their shoulders for weeks before the scythe had fallen. He'd never seen that midnight reaper more clearly than he saw him now, in the gloom behind the trader. The gas still had him in thrall. Trader's grizzled head shook with the cough, his shoulders quivering with the effort. He spat, and as Ryan had already observed several times in the past year, the spittle was flecked with bright blood.
That you, Ryan?
Yeah.
Everyone fed?
Sure. You want anything?
Nah. Not unless you can call back the dead. That mongrel Strasser. We'll regroup and get us some more good men, Ryan. Then go back and wipe Moxon off the earth.
Sure, in time.
3 years since me and Marsh Folsom found them war wags. Now that fire-blasted scab done them in. Just that one left. But one's enough, eh, Ryan?
Maybe. I wish JB was with us. Right now, his miserable face had looked like the rising sun.
They come and they go, Ryan. Heard someone say about being here today and gone tomorrow? I've seen better than 50 summers and winters come and go. I lost count of the dead.
The dead's yesterday. Our worry is tomorrow. You certain we should go into the darks?
Too many reasons, Ryan. All you told me these last days, the girl's story about her folks, then that man, what's his name?
Kurt? The one hit up in Charlie's?
Yeah, went up in the high country, saw a fog. Then that old guy at Teague's, when you say they called Doc, he told about what you could find. Called it a redoubt. Heard the name before, and he said the fog was way out. That right?
Ryan nodded. He was close enough to the old man to catch the dry, sickly odor of his breath, like the scent of an open grave.
So we go up there and see what there is. How long will it take us?
No more trouble for Mutie, Stickies, or Strasser, and we can be up there close to the tree line day after next. You got guards out?
Sure. Two on a ranged perimeter, crossing in and out. Due for a change in about 10 minutes.
Good. Give me a hand up. Want to go lie down in my bunk. Sleep that gas away. Yeah. Now you wake me if I... Why am I telling you that? I know you will, Ryan.
The trader stood, gripping Ryan's wrist to steady himself. Gripping it so hard that the marks would still be livid clear the following morning. Ryan watched him go, seeing the way that pride held the old man erect, stiff-backed, all the way through the lowering trees to the steps of War Wag One. Pulling himself up, and then vanishing into the cramped interior. A touch on Ryan's shoulder made him start, and he turned to stare into the green eyes of Christy Roth.
He's dying.
I know it. He knows it. And now I guess you know it.
The others?
They don't know nothing. I keep meaning to stop that. I mean that they don't know anything. I've seen the blood when he coughs.
How long's he got?
Year, month, weeks, how do I know? I'm not a medic. A traitor won't see one.
Ryan realized he was still carrying the lappa, and he tucked it back into the looped rig inside his coat. The girl stood by him, running a hand through her mane of dazzling hair, and Ryan watched her. In the flickering light of the campfire, he had the momentary illusion that the red hair had a life of its own, that it had some odd sentience. It was almost as if it responded to her hand, moving in long fronds about her fingers.
Gotta check the guards.
I'll come.
Yeah, be company.
They moved away from the circle of light and into the damp coolness of the forest. Normally, Ryan did not like the woods. Man couldn't see far enough. Man was vulnerable among these trees, their trunks and branches tortured and twisted from years of growing in wild weather and the extremes of toxic foulness. All sorts of muties, human and animal, and something in between, lived among these trees. But now they were moving north into the high mountains.
Be in the darks in a few days.
Peter Morita had some old maps, back before the fire. This was called Montana.
I heard that. Time was, I knew the names of almost all of them, the old states. Now I forgot them, don't need them no more. Better signal the guards. They'll be here soon. It's Elle and Meg. Wait here and don't move around or you might get shot. End of a sentry spell and the finger gets white on the trigger. The girl appeared first, a rifle under her arm. She was tall and skinny, with a gray forage cap pulled low over her eyes. Ryan knew she wore it that way to help conceal her baldness. She nodded to him and to Christy and went silently past, heading for the camp. Elle was on the outlying patrol, and he came in at an easy lope, rifle at the high port.
Near shit myself, Ryan.
What's up?
Heard something over there. Thought it was a bastard sec man of that bastard Strasser. Then I heard it again in the brush. I was just going to rake it apart with this babe here, and out comes this bastard wolverine, big as a shepherd dog, muty teeth all, curled in its lip like tusks. Thought it was going to gut-rip me.
Sent Hen and Lint out for the next spell. If Strasser's on the trail, he could be here before dawn.
I'm on it.
Christy and Ryan watched the gray-clad figure of Elle disappear into the darkness. The girl moved to stand closer to Ryan, her hand reaching out into the gloom and resting for a brief moment on his right arm.
When do we leave?
False dawn. We'll put some more distance between us and Strasser.
What do you think we'll find up there?
Fog. That's the only thing that's sure. Only thing they all talk of is the fog. My guess is the fog hides something from the old times. Something they wanted kept hid, so they set this fog like a dog to guard it. Whoever they are, they're long burned, or chilled. But the dog's still there. I seen what it can do. I saw Kurt. He was like a man that's been through a mincer, and then set on fire.
Can we make it?
Warwag holds plenty of gas. Food's fine. Touch short on men, and women.
The traitor?
Soon. I just wish JB was here, and Sam, and Hun, and Call. All good people to have at your back.
Listen.
What?
Quiet, Ryan. I can... Someone's coming.
The gun was in his hand, faster than a thought, his finger tense on the slim trigger. Good though his own senses were, Ryan had been around long enough to know that a lot of people had better ones than he did.
Where? How many? Creepy crawling?
Southerly. Several. No, moving fast and noisy. I guess 5 or 6.
How far off?
Difficult in this wind. Among trees... Maybe a click or two.
That's close. Too close. Go warn the others. Now!
Christy turned and vanished from his side. Ryan headed toward the south. His life depended on the girl being correct. Half a dozen unknowns moving fast toward them. Odds were it was Strasser and an elite of his sec men pushing quickly after them, hoping to wipe away their escape. A hard rain began to fall on Ryan, slanting through the upper branches of the immense stand of lodgepole pines all around him. It sluiced through, turning the ground beneath his boots into a quagmire of mud and leaf mold. He knew now that his greatest hazard was running straight into the attackers. If there was to be any surprise, he wanted it on his side. Holding the lapa at the ready, he dropped to his knees behind a fallen tree, steadying his breathing, wiping rain from his forehead. If he'd grabbed one of the laser rifles with the night sights, he'd have been in better shape. He knelt and waited. The trader said that a man who cried over spilled milk got blinded by his tears. By now, Christy would be back at the camp. The fire would have been stamped out, and most of the party would be inside Warwag 1, manning the entrances and gun ports. There would be 4 outside, covering each compass point, watching for the attackers, ready to give him covering fire, if he made it back. 55 gifts of instant leaden mortality for the group of hostiles coming toward him, with 3 extra sticks inside his coat, ready to slot in. If they were muties with dark sight, he would be in the greatest danger. Then it wouldn't matter much if they were armed with flintlock muskets. He'd still be in a load of trouble. That thought made him tuck the weighted white silk scarf out of sight under the coat. He hunched and waited. The lightning hit a tree less than 100 paces away from him. He flinched, closing his eye against the instant blindness. He licked his lips, tasting the harsh metallic flavor of ozone. If the attackers had been close enough, they could have taken him like a light-dazed rabbit.
Ah, scorch it to hell.
Rubbing furiously at his right eye, seeing only a crimson mist, he blinked again and again. His head was lowered against the driving rain as he desperately fought to clear his vision. He peered cautiously around the bole of the tumbled tree and saw them. 7 of them, all wearing the black waterproof slickers favored by the Sekhmen from Moxon. Hooded, high black boots. Oddly, not one of them was carrying a weapon at the ready, though he could make out rifles slung across the shoulders of some of them. It looked as if 2 of them were wounded, leaning on the arms of others. They seemed more like refugees than a raiding party. Either way, Ryan was going to take them out. He set the Lapa on automatic and readied himself, bracing for the kick of the gun. At a range now of less than 40 paces, he could take them all out in one savage raking burst of fire. Ryan waited, picking the moment when all of the enemy would be out in the open at once. At 30 paces, the Sekhmen stopped, and the leading figure turned around, pointing toward where Ryan waited. He tensed, even though he knew they couldn't possibly make him out in that weather and light. The point man turned back, throwing off the shiny black hood. In the slash of silver lightning, Ryan saw the face. And the hair. Green hair.
Hanukkah! Han! Over here!
Ryan! You old bastard! Ryan!
She ran toward him, then stopped and stared at him. And to their mutual embarrassment, she began to weep.
You son of a bitch. I thought we'd never see you again.
Dawn was about an hour away. The rain had stopped and the electrical storm had passed, grumbling its way to the south of them, leaving a quiet night. All the new arrivals had been fed and found bunks in the war wag. Only J.B. Dix remained awake, talking to Ryan, telling him what had finally gone down in Moxon. The glowing embers of the dying fire glinted off the steel-rimmed glasses on his nose. In the half-light, his face looked more sallow and pinched than ever. Around them, in the slumbering forest, the sentries still patrolled. They would all be on the move by first light.
When the convoy blew, it knocked us all to hell and back. Sam and Hun was laid out colder than a 10-year winter. I got my shoulder bruised some. Figured it was broke, but it's not. Girls came around, we got out. Call found the old man, Doc. Got scrambled brains, Ryan. I don't know about him at all.
Where'd you pick up Charlie and the guy they were hunting? Kurt? He looks near dead, Kurt.
Him and the traitor both. I looked in on him. Can't be more than days now, Ryan.
Yeah.
Fishmouth Charlie and Kurt were on the edge of Moxon. She was near carrying him. We stopped with him to draw breath. Kurt was mumbling about when he was a blaster with McCandless up in the darks. Claimed he knew the way to find the fogs. Said there was a big, big secret up there. A redoubt, he called it. Figured we'd bring him. We liberated these clothes from some of Strasser's killers. There's been a small fight. A few bodies around.
Knowing you, J.B., my guess is that small fight was probably more like a major battle.
Yeah, well, maybe. Don't make any difference now. It's over. Anyway, Strasser's bound to come after us. He went ape crazy. Saw him twice, but I couldn't get a clear shot at him. I think our bombs fired the whole town. A rising wind did the rest. I looked back, and Moxon was most gone.
He made good time. Another few hours, and we'd have been gone and in the hills. You'd never have caught us.
Rockin' a hard place, my boy. Managed to beg a couple of buggies from some Sekhmen who didn't need them anymore, being dead and all. Ran out of gas 3-4 hours ago. Been on foot since then. Knew where to find you. Had to be on the way to the darks.
Yeah, it's the darks. He figured it easy enough. Strassel guess it's the darks, too, I suppose.
He can't have much of a force left.
Either he catches us real soon, or he doesn't catch us at all.
I'll rouse everyone. They can catch up on missing sleep over the next day or so, if we keep out of trouble. I'll get him out and start the show.
The sky was noticeably lighter to the south and east, but it was streaked with dark, oily smoke that showed up against the red tinge of dawn. Something big was burning out of control. That would be Moxon. Behind him, Ryan heard the familiar noises of the war wag coming to life. Everyone knew his task and his place. Inside the vehicle, there would be little talk, beyond the routine checks of switches and contacts. It was something that J.B. had introduced to the trader, stressing the importance of everyone knowing not only his own duties, but the jobs of at least 2 other members of the crew. And, time and again, that insistence had saved all their lives. Standing outside the vehicle, Ryan knew precisely where they all were positioned and what they would be doing. Jess in the driver's seat, eyes ranging over the dials, automatically checking fuel, pressures, and temperatures. O'Mara in the machine gun blister, dry firing the piece, making sure of the ammunition. Even Laws would be busy, stacking away all the pots and pans,